Welcome to BIT, the Brilliant Investment Thinkers podcast. Where the Inside Network, a community of financial professionals, come together to discuss the things that matter in advice, investing, and life. Covering everything from growing businesses to regulation and investing. Our guests will reflect on a lifetime in financial services, sharing their stories, knowledge, and experience. And now, here's your podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Brilliant Investment Thinking podcast. I'm Tan Sharp, Managing Editor at The Inside Network. The advice technology sector has been hailed as everything from the industry's greatest ongoing failure to its only hope and saviour. And while both of those descriptors are probably on the extreme end of the spectrum, it's fair to say that advice tech will be instrumental in shaping the industry in years to come. But what is advice tech? Well, it's a bunch of stuff with a lot of terms that often get conflated. On the consumer side, it's robo-advice in the form of investment tools, but then there's also so much software being developed around what clients can do with budgeting and superannuation, a whole bunch of other things. On the advisor side, of course, things get even more convoluted with everything from investment platforms and CRMs to compliance filtering services, online portfolio managers, risk profiling tools, and really a plethora of programs designed to make advice delivery easier, while ironically enough, at the same time, making things a lot more complicated. You could say, though, that advice technology hasn't really reached its potential. Aside from investment platforms, I think they've thrived over the years. But if you look at CRMs, for example, nothing has come along that has really challenged Iress's X plan and knocked it off the perch. Even though, of course, advisors spend a lot of time complaining about it. I know I did when I was in practice. But is that really fair? I mean, are the solutions already there in the market, all these alternatives, but advisors just aren't ready to embrace them? As usual, my view on this is limited by my own experience, which is scant, I must admit. My guest, on the other hand, has a finely tuned sense of what's happening in advice technology. Pete Warne is well known in the industry for his work at Finura Group, which specializes in wealth technology solutions and really guiding advisors in what is an area they're often not well versed in. Pete, thanks for coming on.
Good to be with you, Tom.
So tell me about yourself and your journey leading up to Finura Group.
Well, like everybody, I didn't really choose this career path or financial services for that matter. But when I was at uni, a job came across my desk. I had to go to uni part-time and work full-time because of some financial issues in my family. And the first job I was offered was a paraplanner back in 2000 for Suncorp Bank. That was my first job. And I haven't really looked back. So I've had a variety of roles in the industry. I've been a paraplanner, I've been an advisor, I've worked in product manufacturing, done a lot of work in strategy and marketing, sales. But about 10 years ago, I did my master's and I quickly worked out that if I wanted to have any relevancy in the future, I had to get my head across technology, not product. So that was a big change for me. I joined a business called Inzumo, which was a leading X-Plan consultancy, met my now business partner and a whole bunch of my colleagues actually in that business. And here we are, you know, sort of 10 years later, and we've got a thriving consultancy doing all things technology. So that's my journey to date.
Wow. So you were actually, if we look back far enough in the financial advice register, we'd see your name on there.
You would see my name. I was an authorised rep with RetireInvest.
Wow, as mine. Very good. RetireInvest. The paraplanner background, I guess that would really set you up in terms of some of the technical knowledge that you've needed. But I don't know about your experience, but I feel like the longer I've been out of advice, I tend to sort of lose a lot of that finite detail.
I think some of the terms have changed. I remember doing a lot of withdrawal and recontribution strategies. I'm sure some of the audience sort of would remember those well. So certainly some of my technical knowledge is probably a bit rusty from where it was. I've got to say, though, some of the technology paraplanners use hasn't changed. Mm-hmm. So back then I spent a lot of my time in Excel, a lot of my time in Word. We used some old software called FPI, I think. Yes. And then and just before I left paraplanning, we started experimenting with a cloud-based solution called X-Plan.
Wow, nostalgia. So maybe you could set the table a little bit by defining advice technology. I probably botched it a little bit earlier and gave some idea of the scope of it, but maybe you can extend on that and really scope out the things that fit within the advice tech umbrella.
Yeah, so we deliberately tried to use a term commonly used across other industries called what are the jobs to be done in a business. So we look at it at a really basic level. What jobs do I need to do to issue a piece of advice to a client and to serve and monitor that client ongoing, and we break it up as simply as that. Because quite often we find that a lot of tech is deployed into a practice and it's almost up to the practice to try to work out to rebuild their model around the technology. We think it should actually be the other way around. So in our experience, advice technology really fits in two categories. It's technology that helps you, you know, produce advice, manage the client base, run your internal operations. But the other part of the technology, which I think is probably underdone, is the actual technology that interfaces between you and the client and facilitates that relationship. So they're the two categories we kind of look at. And as you sort of, you know, said in your introduction, there's a plethora of things that fit in those categories and confusingly cross over those categories, which I think is why advisors are where they are when it comes to advice tech decisions.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why it makes it so hard to define. Would you consider the real consumer-facing technologies being part of that advice tech umbrella, or is that a separate basket?
I think they are, because the job is actually still getting advice. So in the eyes of the consumer, I still want to understand what I do with my money, how am I tracking, you know, the same fundamental things. And I think this has been one of the maybe the great learnings potentially from the various experiments that have happened with robo-investing and robo-advice is that we've probably seen them as completely segments, as in one is B2C software and the other is B2B software. But in reality, they're doing the same thing. And so I think this is probably where some of the criticism has been of some of the software providers that you mentioned, is that building software for businesses is a really different skill set to building software for consumers as well. And a lot of companies are trying to do both at the same time. Really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, that doubles on the complexity there and the challenges. You mentioned before that you know, with you guys, it's a matter of putting together tech solutions that both clients and advisors can use. So what are you seeing? Well, I guess firstly, maybe tell me, what do advisors come to you and ask for?
Yep.
And what are you seeing out there? What are they saying in terms of the problems and the challenges that they're facing?
So two reasons people come to us. The first one is we've made a technology decision. It hasn't worked out too well. We need to get out of it. We need to hit the pause button or the refresh button.
That's a common narrative.
That's probably 80% of the calls we get. The other 20% is the ones we prefer to get. We're thinking of doing something. How do we go about making a good decision here?
Okay.
A lot of business owners and financial planners are small business owners fundamentally, make decisions generally from an emotional standpoint, I would say. They're often sold technology rather than actually thinking practically about these things. Decision making often isn't sort of firm-wide, because often sometimes people making the technology decisions aren't the ones actually using the software. So we've seen many cases where paraplanners has been handed new tech without any real engagement beforehand. So you can imagine how that goes down.
Is that often because it has been sold, as you mentioned?
100%.
Yeah.
Advisor goes to a conference, sees a great presentation, doesn't particularly like XYZ software provider for whatever reason. Usually it's because they feel like they're getting charged too much, or they don't like the way the BDM spoke to them, or whatever it was. And they make a highly emotional decision to change, which has huge ramifications. I've always said that changing software or CRM is probably more disruptive than changing licensee. And most people in the industry have changed licensee at some stage and know what that's like.
Yeah.
So we would consider that a more thoughtful process of making software decisions is better than an emotional one.
Okay. And so people are coming to you and saying, look, we've got a tech stack that's been hastily cobbled together, I imagine, quite often.
Yep, tech pile, we call it.
Tech pile. So how do we either knit that together and marry all these different pieces of software?
Yep.
Or how do we unwind this completely and get, you know, import a proprietary solution or do something ourselves? Are they often the questions?
Yeah. So there'll be a number of sort of, I guess, hypothesis statements that we'll go into. We tend to look at slightly different approach. So most commonly we'll actually, when we get to the end, we'll often have stripped out tech. We'll often have simplified, not added new things. That's a common misconception about work we do. We'll often find, particularly since COVID, the amount of replication of systems, and we've had all these staff at home fending for themselves and they've just added new things. We'll have businesses that are using three different task flow management applications. I mean, just things like that, just completely counterintuitive. So that's for the first thing. The other component is that we would spend a lot of time interviewing staff, trying to understand what makes this business tick? What's the capability in this business? For me, there's no point pointing a nuclear warhead at an anthill. So common example is some businesses will look at, we want to go to Salesforce. Let's just use that example. Salesforce is a enterprise grade, huge beast of a CRM system that requires significant investment beyond the fees to make it work. you know, and yet we find some small financial planning businesses with four or five staff trying to implement Salesforce. And we sort of go, gee, no wonder you're drowning. This thing costs many hundreds of thousands of dollars to get right. So for us, it's actually trying to fit the right tech with the right kind of business. And often it's not about, is it a super high net worth practice or is it, you know, it doesn't actually matter. It's actually what are the jobs that business really needs to do and what's the capability of the staff in that business to use that technology. And there's no point giving people tools they simply can't use.
Yeah, I can imagine that you'd see quite a lot these small to mid-sized advice practices implementing what are really expensive enterprise class systems that don't really need, but they've been sold on the idea of this thing that can do everything and the capabilities, which are really impressive, but not really required. So I could imagine you'd see that quite a lot. On the client side of advice tech, I think it's becoming clear that advisors can't really plug the entire advice gap across the community. You never have enough new entrants. And the solution isn't bringing the institutions into it or fintech. I would think that it's both. Does that kind of broadly scan with you?
I think so, yeah. I mean, you know, I think most advisors I talk to now turn away as many clients as they say yes to, which is not a good feeling because in my experience, most advisors get into this profession because they like helping people. There's nothing worse than sending people away. So what, you know, we're hoping to see a lot more of is more investment in these digital advice solutions, and QAR is going to help some of that, I think, provide capital for this, that hopefully in their design thinks about an advisor relationship at some point of the life cycle of that client. So these tech solutions aren't built completely independent of thinking about advice. There's some appreciation that there will be a human involved with this individual at some point in the future. But ultimately, we do need more tools for everyday Australians to make better decisions, because at the moment they're pretty much relying on the internet and their friends to make decisions.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much of this is on advisors to actually get better at using the solutions, because they do have a huge role to play. And I think part of the solution to the advice access issue is advisors having what you might call crèche clients or clients in training or often accumulators that aren't really paying an ongoing fee based on their investable assets, but have made contact with an advisor. And I know a few advice groups are already doing this. And that advisor has kind of put them onto basic investing tools. And then at some stage, they graduate to a more of a holistic advice model. So are those kind of, is that dynamic something that we need more of, advisors to get sort of a system where they have clients, accumulators that they can put under these basic investing tools where they don't take all of their needs into account? Appreciate that a lot of this is going to have a lot of this is going to be influenced by what happens with the quality of advice for you, but we'll put that to the side for a minute. But is it really important that advisors get across the full suite of tools so they can understand that those methods work?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think anyone that's got a business plan that goes longer than 5 years should be thinking about this stuff. Even businesses we talk to who have their clients, mostly baby boomers, in decumulation, so they're in pension mode, are actually starting to notice their FUM dropping quite quickly. So now starting to finally think about how do we service the accumulator market really efficiently. So, yeah, look, I'm optimistic that the reg environment will improve for this. And I actually think, to be honest, I think if you think about a consumer, they're not silly. They're going to understand that if a tech solution is provided to them, an advice tech solution is provided by a bank or a superannuation fund, it's going to be pretty commoditized, pretty generalized, and it's going to be for the masses. Where I think there's a consumer cohort, and you know, they're the kind of people I think that spend $2,000 on an iPhone, who don't necessarily want to spend $5,000 or $6,000 a year on advice, but they do want to feel that whatever they're getting to manage their money is a little bespoke, a little premium. And I think there's a little bit of a gap there in the market that advisors can fill by perhaps taking some of this technology, which will become quite ubiquitous, I think, customizing it to their value proposition, their branding, put it in there. As you see, the crash is a great analogy. But the challenge, and I think the thing where we need to go, is it's got to be more than just an investment solution, because, you know, a lot of my friends don't have a lot of money to invest, particularly now when interest rates are heading the way they are, but they need advice. So it's probably going to look more like a financial coaching type solution.
Sure.
I think it'll be really interesting to see whether some of the big tech companies move into this space potentially. I mean, you know, Apple have moved into banking. That's really fascinating for me. You know, so Apple launched a bank account feature on Apple Wallet last month. They took $1 billion in 3 days in deposits in the US.
Wow.
So you can just literally do savings into an Apple bank account every time you pay. You know, people look at their Apple Watch all the time for guidance on fitness and how am I going at health. What if they started putting some financial features into their ecosystem.
Absolutely. It's a scary thought for the incumbent tech companies, I think.
I think so. So I think Apple's going to be interesting here. Google's going to move in this space. So for me, you're going to have to do something a little bespoke and a little interesting, because otherwise consumers are going to gravitate to all of those solutions. I think that's actually a bigger threat for the super funds and the banks, because they're not going to see it coming and going to go, wow, we're being disintermediated by phone.
Yes. and it could absolutely happen. I believe that. Yep. I mentioned earlier in my introduction that advice technology hasn't really lived up to its potential. And I always go back to a memory I have of an old boss of mine in advice who said that advice tech had been a damp squib up to that point. He was English, so I'll forgive him for the kooky term there. But I think it's fair to say it hasn't really reached its potential. If we look at sort of CRMs and Xplan, and it's still the incumbent provider, nothing's really taken its place. Investment platforms is a different story, because that has obviously gone off like a rocket ship if you look at sort of NetWealth and HUB24 and all those new players. But other than that, we're still waiting for a piece of software to really come through and shake the earth for advice. But sometimes I think, you know what, maybe it's already there, but there's just a bit of inertia in terms of picking it up, because we're not always early adapters in terms of technology in Australia. So which side of that do you think is more fair? Is the technology already there and we're just a little bit late on catching up to it?
I genuinely think it is. I have to say, I've wrestled with this a lot, Tom. For clarity, a squib is a firework, right? Like a cracker. Is that what it is?
A damp squib. No, I think it's some kind of small implement that you might use for fishing or something like that.
Right. Okay.
I never quite clarified it.
Someone will Google that or ChatGPT it. So look, there's a couple of factors driving all this. The market has changed enormously. So when these solutions were built, whether it's Xplan or whoever you're talking to, you know, advice was controlled by the big banks, AMP and a few others. The IFA market was considered a small add-on to the industry, a distant sort of thing. And within about 4 years, we've completely flipped the other way. So this is what's driving a lot of dissatisfaction. Part of that was that a lot of the selection of software, configuration of software and support of software was done by those banks and licensees. Advisors didn't even have to touch that part. And whilst they weren't happy necessarily with all of it, they weren't really paying for it either. It was kind of all bundled into everything. We've now got a situation where we've got explosive growth in the IFA market, but we've sort of lost that infrastructure that was provided and subsidized by the banks to, as I said, configure, deploy and support this technology into practices. So where we've got to get to, I think we have plenty of good tech in this industry. We probably, and you know, self-share consultants are always going to say this stuff, but I think we need to invest more on the configuration and deployment of the technology into our businesses. We see many businesses that are really happy with the software they use. Never 100% happy, but you know, I'd say 8 out of 10 happy.
It's good enough.
But they're the ones that have invested a lot in it. It's a common misconception. You just do not buy software in the B2B space and pull it off the shelf and install it tomorrow and it starts working for you. A couple of things maybe like Calendly and those basic kind of productivity applications, no problem. Anything else that's CRM, you've got to spend generally at least equal to what you're spending on annual licensing on configuration and support. And that, in every other industry, that's what happens. Businesses will spend $1 million on Salesforce licensing. They'll probably spend $1 million supporting it and developing it. And that message is slowly starting to get through. The challenge has been for the software providers, though, is that it's hard to do both. It's hard to tell your client, oh, buy our software. Oh, by the way, you've got to spend a lot more money to make it work. They're just not there yet making that decision. And I think if your customers aren't happy, you're not necessarily leaning into that either. So that's one thing. Why haven't we received this sort of, nirvana, holy grail of the ultimate solution? I don't think it exists for the pure reason that this industry has found a million different ways of doing the same jobs, same processes, same tasks. That has only been exacerbated by everyone getting their own license in our experience. So it's going to be bloody hard for anyone to actually nail that, in our opinion. We have optimism, IntelliFlow's coming to the market, who have got real credentials in the UK competing for large market share of the IRS, patient capital, those things. So it remains to be seen how that will play out, but I think competition is going to be good for this sector from that perspective. But the other reality is the advisor market's halved, and therefore by definition, the market for software has also halved.
Yes.
So I don't expect anyone to be dumping tens of millions of dollars into building new software for financial advisors anytime soon.
Yeah, it's interesting what you say, and I think you're right. There is a lot of the default investment in advice that went out with the banks, and now I think you still are getting patches of real investment from some of the pseudo or neo institutional players. And if you look at sort of, say, InFocus and Darren Steinhardt, what they're doing and putting a lot of proprietary solutions together, and I think some they're even putting out there in the market for free. But then you've got someone like Insignia who are quite happy to stick with Wealth Central. I think they purchased and as part of a tech stack, and they're not actually looking at putting together their own proprietary solution. So there is some investment there, but it's patchy. And so we don't have that default sort of layer of four big banks all spending money on not only the new solutions, but the implementation, as you say, because that's expensive too.
Yeah. And it's not all good, by the way. I mean, the one of the problems with the bank driven advice tech solutions, so they're so compliance driven. You know, so if you talk to someone at IRIS, they'll say, well, don't blame us. We just built what the banks asked us to build. And if I was IRIS, I would have done the same because they were my biggest customers. So, you know, they was lots of other things IRIS wanted to do with their tech roadmaps, but their customers were demanding very compliance-driven, you know, features built into Xplan. That's changing, but, you know, it takes time. And I think what does get me excited, though, is we're actually now seeing real evidence of capital coming into the advice businesses themselves, not the licensees.
Yep.
So look at like Paul Barrett's AZNGA, investing in practices, and there's plenty of others now swooping around this market. I'm hopeful that meaningful capital at the practice level will hopefully provide more bandwidth for businesses to actually invest in technology deployment, actually invest in their own tech and how they use it, and ideally the people, the capability they have within their businesses to use the tech and support it as well.
Absolutely.
That's the gap. So other markets, particularly like the US, most large RIAs will have an internal CTO. They'll have people on the tools working on the CRM, the systems and processes. And yes, they'll work with a business like a Finura to do the heavy lifting on integrations and all those interesting things, but they wouldn't outsource it altogether to someone like us. I reckon that's where we're going to get to.
Do you see that a lot, how, you know, chief technology officers embedded in advice practices? Because I know with interest before that you mentioned when you come into a business as a counsellor, a lot of the time when there's new technology to implement, you speak to the staff first and find out what the problems are there. Yep. Is that an issue that when you go in, sometimes if they don't have a CTO, then it's just a matter of sort of piecing together, like a CSI episode, what the real issues are?
Yeah, and there's always someone in the business, like a Jackie or a Steve or someone in the business who everyone just goes to who knows everything. But, you know, the minute COVID happened, that person was disconnected from the day-to-day. That person gets sick or leaves, they're in real trouble. So there's always someone in the business who's a catch-all, who just does all this stuff. Their title might be general manager or practice manager, but Tan, they're also doing finance, HR, compliance, you name it, and tech's its own kind of thing. So, and we're also super realistic. Like if you've got a business of 10 people, you can't afford to have a full-time CTO. You know, like it's not, so part of our role is to sort of bridge that gap. So we sort of provide, I guess, an added layer of capability to those people who maybe just don't have that experience, something we try to do at Finura. But I think ultimately larger businesses will look to bring their own, you know, to bring, so build their own internal tech capability, particularly where it's going to become really obvious that the businesses that invest in tech capability are going to be more scalable, they're going to be more profitable, and by default be more valuable. And I know from talking to private equity firms, they are looking at things like that when they're assessing valuations on financial planning businesses, because they know from experience in other markets, that's what ultimately drives scale.
Do you think, you mentioned before that this, it's a little bit tough to invest in the advice industry because from a tech point of view, because it's halved in terms of its size. And we did see, I think it was Advice Intelligence last week, going into administration. Do you think we'll see more of that before we bottom out and the industry starts to sort of build again?
I think we will. The only reason being money was quite cheap 3 years ago. So we had a lot of ventures back that you'd probably have to say didn't have a huge chance of success. But that's okay. That's part of the ebb and flow of the business cycle. You know, when something like happens with AI, and I'm optimistic AI is going to find a way through, everyone thinks it's a big deal. In the US, that's a weekly or daily event that someone runs out of money and goes on to something new. We're not a risk-taking culture in Australia compared to other markets. So failure's not something which you should look at as a bad thing. But the reality is I think that the scrutiny on who gets backing will be a lot more intense. Your business model has to really look viable. You've got to be the right people. You know, you just can't be anyone off the street now with an idea getting funded. And I think, you know what, that's probably not a bad thing because I think the sector got pretty noisy pretty quick with all these tech solutions.
It did. It got quite frothy there for a while.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier that really we have a lot of different ways to do what is a simple thing with CRMs. And if you look at a basic CRM, all you really need is a portfolio manager, a data feed, something to record your records of advice and maybe one or two bits and bobs for a bit of colour and movement. But we're really making it a lot more complicated than it needs to be sometimes. And I'm just wondering, is there a solution out there that is stripped back and a lot more affordable for advisors that they're missing? So some of those smaller practices with not sort of explain money to spend can use it?
Yeah, we see, interesting, one that's I don't want to particularly mention individual providers, but one that doesn't get a lot of noise is WorkSorted. It's a good example.
Yeah.
It just does the basic revenue management, basic workflows for a practice, basic CRM functionality. They don't move into advice gen. They don't pretend to be anything they're not, and they're stuck to their knitting. They've got a huge user base that's not well known in this industry, and it's very affordable.
Right.
So, you know, and that's a similar philosophy to how Teleflow started, for example, in the UK. They started as just a revenue management, built their capability as they go.
And they're really pushing into the Australian market.
They are, yeah. Yeah. So I think it certainly can be done. I think the tech companies are going to be successful, the ones that focus on, you know, their knitting, their niche. They focus on nailing
sure.
the thing they're really good at.
Will the CRM market, will AI have a big bearing of that in the next iteration, the next wave of CRM tools, do you think, over the next few years?
I don't think so. I think CRM is still an important capability that AI will be built on top of.
Sure.
So what remains to be seen is, I've been down the rabbit hole of AI and we're all learning daily, right? But I see AI as a platform capability. So it's not going to be... And it's up to individual software solutions to decide how they deploy AI into their feature set, how they go. What's interesting to me is I think some of the advice tech providers in this sector will be cautious using AI, cautious around data security particularly, and how that plays out. And if you're an advisor and you've still got issues managing data feeds, you're not overly interested in AI at the moment currently. So if I was an advisor, I'd be thinking about, I'm going to see AI more in my daily productivity tools. I'm going to see it in my email, Outlook. I'm going to see it in Word, Excel, Teams. That's where you're going to see AI. If not already in months, you're going to start using AI. I think advice tech will take longer for those things to come through. I know the platforms are experimenting with different AI use cases, but we're just learning as we go, right?
Absolutely. We're still figuring it out. And I think you're right there. AI isn't a catch-all solution on its own. It gets embedded in different things,
yeah.
But you just don't fix everything with AI. So if it's not AI, what do you think is the next real wave of fintech development for advice? Where do you think in the next 5 years, what do you think we'll be talking about? Is it the next iteration of investment platforms, or will there be a game breaker solution?
Two areas. I think client portals particularly are going to heat up even more. I think the acquisition of MyProsperity by Hub24 has sent a bit of a shockwave across the platform sector, because sooner or later people have worked out that the closer you are to the end customer, the better. And if you're on their phone, even better. You have a daily interaction with that customer.
Meet your clients where they are.
100%. So I think for software companies and anyone, you should be building software that means that the eyes of that user are on your screen, not other people's screens. And I think for customers, it's definitely portal. It feels like that's where it's kind of heading. So I think we're going to see big investment in that space. It's going to come from super funds. It's going to come from banks looking to extend into wealth via portals, not through advice. That's what we're going to see. And the real question will be, is there going to be a portal that potentially dominates the sector that we haven't? Could it be MyProsperity? I don't know.
Or could it be Apple?
So this is the thing. So I think it's going to be mobile first portal development around advice connectivity will be where we see. And that is a skill set that is not common in our industry. It's actually something that banks have nailed. They get this stuff really well. So I think that's where we're going to see big investment. And the other thing driving that is cybersecurity. We've got to get advisors off email.
Yes.
The amount of sensitive information that gets sent over email is really concerning.
And the amount of scams that we see coming through email.
Scams. And it's going to get worse with AI. Because I can pull up an AI bot now, download a recording of this podcast, and I can then make phone calls as Tom.
Scary thought.
Yeah.
But you're right. You're absolutely right. And it's coming at lightning speed.
100%. So I think secure portal is going to be really important. A second component is platform tech. I can't help but think that big players like FNZ, SS&C, that have valuations at 10, 20 times, even our most largest valued platforms in Australia, are going to be looking at this market really closely. We have a wonderful market that it grows 10% guaranteed year on year, under serviced by advisors. You know, all those recipes are there for real investment. And as platforms become less and less differentiated from a core feature set, the battle for technology will become more evident. We've seen in the UK and the US, those big technology registry providers now go direct into planners to help build custom platforms at the practice level. It's a bit back to the future. We used to do that, you know, a long time ago. But I think if we see mega practices start to develop with private equity, where we do have many independent practices with multiple billions of dollars, they're going to be looking at building custom platforms. Exactly. That's what's happening in the UK.
That's where FNZ and groups like that come in and help.